Thank you, choir and orchestra. And also want to express my appreciation to Delaine's uncle, Mr. Ray Childress, playing our organ today. He drives over from Kennesaw every other week to rehearse. He just wants to serve. He is 92 years old. And he's an excellent driver, has about the best outlook on life of anybody that I know in the whole wide world. And his son and daughter-in-law are here today, Neil and Elizabeth Childress. They all go to Burnt Hickory Baptist over in Kennesaw, an excellent church. And I think that Ray is the oldest active member of the choir. Now, I do want you to let you in on a secret. There have been 3 staff positions open at Burnt Hickory, and Ray has applied for all 3 of those staff positions. You see, he and his wife were the first married couple to graduate from Southwestern Seminary years ago. One of the staff members that was conducting the interview said, "You have the most interesting resume I believe I've ever seen." But he refused to give him an interview. Ray and I went out to eat lunch the other day. I said, "Ray, your son is an attorney in Buckhead. This is definitely age discrimination. I would sue the pants off of Burnt Hickory Baptist Church." But they have not proceeded with that yet. Well, today I want to talk to you about choices, and we'll look at one verse, Psalm 23, verse 3, something that you're very, very familiar with. Psalm 23, verse 3 says, "He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake." As my brother, sister, and I were approaching those teen years, Dad sat down with us and he said, "When you're 16, do you want an automobile?" We said, "Yes." He said, "You'd better save your money, because I'm not buying a car for any of you." So we went in the lawn cutting business. I was age 12. I'm not talking zero turn. I'm talking no turn. I'm talking 3.5 horse Tecumseh engines. We'd never heard of self-propel. We'd do an acre for $2 or $2.50 pushing those mowers. When I got 16, I hit it big. I went to work for the A&P. Some of you remember what that was. I wanted to buy a car. Dad said, "We'll start looking in the paper." Now, here's what I found. And Dad said, "I'll go with you to look at all of them." It was 1970, and I picked out a 1964 Buick Electra 225. Now, some of you don't know what that is. I'll give you a tip. When you got in the car, somebody said, "All aboard," because it was about as long as from here to the Christian flag. Had all kind of electric gadgets. Half of them didn't work. So Dad rode with me down the highway. This thing got about 12 miles to the gallon. He said, "Son, I don't think this is a real good idea for you." I listened. That was rare. Then I found a 1966 Mustang, 6-cylinder, with a 1-barrel carburetor and a 3-speed in the floor, white, black interior, and no air conditioner. Dad went with me out off of Highland Avenue near Daniel Field in Augusta, and there was a man named Paul Treffs. Paul was the local Arby's franchise owner, and he had this extra car. He wanted to get rid of it. And I remember when I looked at it, it had recap tiger paws on it. Well, I knew I was moving on up. So we arrived at a price of $675. I'll never forget when we got the insurance and I went back, and my first drive parallel to Daniel Field on the way home, I was a stud muffin. And if you remember the 8-tracks, some of you remember 8-tracks, it had a hidden compartment right there above the gear shift. And I got me some 10 speakers and hired somebody to put them in the back and then put a hidden 8-track up there. So when you picked up a date, you turned on the car, they had no idea where that sound was coming from. Well, I had that car about 3 years, and I put a new set of Goodyear tires on that vehicle. It had never ridden any better. I drove by the Mercury lot in 1973. And I don't know why, but I fell in love with a metallic blue with a white full vinyl top Mercury Montego with a V8 and an air conditioner. Let me ask you a question. What in the world does a college student, what in the world is he doing with a family car? And I remember the day when I traded it, and there was a gentleman in the back who detailed cars. Now understand, I was working in the grocery store going to college. I was worth a lot of money. And gas prices were going up, and I looked at the old gentleman, and I said, you know, I said, I'm concerned about this automobile. He had it all slicked and shined. And I said, the price of gas keeps going up. And I'm worried. He looked at me and said, boss, man, buy a car this expensive, ain't worried about the price of gas. And I remember when they drove my little 66 Mustang off to the side to be wholesaled at a dealer sale. May of this year, I looked up 1966 Mustangs equipped like mine. They have original equipment and been restored. Do you know what they sell for? Between $20,000 and $55,000 a piece. What a stupid choice I made back in 1970. You know, our choices make us or break us. We make a bad choice, we suffer the consequences. We may make a good choice, and they can be redeeming in our life as long as we live on this earth and in the hereafter. But you'll frequently rejoice over the good ones, and you regret all those bad choices. We all face decisions. You're here today, this morning, because you made a decision. I'm not going to sleep in. I'm going to get up and I'm going to come to Bible study and I'm coming to worship. Some of you are here today, you're suffering from a bad decision you made. Some of you are at a crossroads in your life. Some of you, life is good because God has led you to make good decisions and you're coachable. Today I want you to see our shepherd and how he is able to take care of our past, our present, and our future. He's here to assist us with our choices. I want to talk about two ministries here. First of all, the ministry of restoration. Look what he says there. He refreshes my soul. And we're talking about the relationship here of a sheep and the shepherd. There are two dangers that a sheep faced. And those two dangers are two quandaries that only a shepherd can handle for the sheep. And number one is this: the possibility of the sheep becoming a cast sheep. Write down Psalm 42, verse 11. The psalmist cries out, "Why are you cast down, O my soul?" Now, a Palestinian, even today, would understand this analogy that's given in this verse. He's referring to a cast sheep, or one that's cast down. This is the English shepherd's term for a sheep that's turned over on its back and he can't get up by himself. One of the saddest sights you'll ever see is a cast sheep. They're lying on their back, their feet are straight up in the air, and you'll see they're struggling frantically to stand up in a hopeless situation. Now here's what happens. You'll have sheep that maybe is a little bit on the heavy side. He decides he's going to rest in a little hollow or a little ravine. So they just lay down on their side, and the next thing you know, gravity takes them over on their back. When that happens, their airways, they're not getting enough air. It gets blocked. Several things take place. You see, when he does this, and his feet are straight up in the air, he can no longer turn himself over and get back on his feet. The circulation leaves his legs and feet. Also, gas begins to accumulate in the abdominal area, the stomach area. and the belly swells and gets hardened, and then the air pipe is cut off. In hot weather, they soon die. In cool weather, they can survive for a little while. Now, when a shepherd goes and finds one of those cast sheep, one on his back, he has to take time to restore him. Now, the first thing that shepherd does, he goes and massages the legs of that sheep. He's trying to restore circulation. And I want you to know, after he does that for a little while, then he rolls the sheep over on his side. And what happens there? It relieves some of the gases there and takes the pressure off of his windpipe. Then he begins to talk very gently to the sheep to relieve the stress. The next step is the shepherd bends over and puts his arms under the belly of the sheep, stands him up on all fours, but he doesn't walk away. He continues to stand there because more circulation is rushing to the legs. The sheep is very, very wobbly. And after a little while, he's stable and able to walk back to the flock. Now that's a tremendous picture of what God is willing to do for you and me. If you've ever had your soul cast down, if you've ever been knocked flat of your back spiritually and you're struggling to get back up, God's promise that he'll come and restore our soul. He'll give us confidence, peace, and strength. I like what the psalmist said, David, in Psalm 51, verse 12. He said, "Restore to me the joy of your salvation." Sometimes we're cast down by guilt. God gives us an opportunity to be a great witness to somebody, and we say something that's not becoming to a Christian in front of that person and destroys our witness, and we're smitten with guilt. We say, he says here, if we'll just trust him. 1 John 1:9, we'll confess our sins. He's faithful and just to forgive us and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. He sets us back up on all fours to face another day. Maybe that your soul is cast down by grief. You and I don't understand what it's like to lose a mom or dad to death until it happens. I've never had children, but I've walked along many people whose babies got sick and died, or maybe their child was hit by a drunk driver and killed. And I try to be as compassionate, patient, and as prayerful as I can, but there's no way I can understand the grief they're experiencing. I don't understand the grief that some of you are going through right now, who's lost a husband or a wife to death. But I want you to know the Good Shepherd understands and has compassion. He says in 2 Corinthians 12:9, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." So whether you're broken by guilt or you're broken by grief, God will restore you. Now, there's another danger for a sheep. There's two dangers. One, that they become a cast sheep. On their back, they can't get up. And the second thing that I want you to see here is they become a lost sheep. That's very easy for sheep. They get out and they nibble on grass, or they nibble on grain, and they're concerned about filling their belly. They don't look to the left or the right. They don't look forward. They don't look backwards. And the next thing you know, they've wandered completely off from the fold. They only have one thing on their mind: food. Now watch this carefully. When you think about a dog has a homing device. A dog will usually come back home. Even a cat might be gone for a week or two, but bless your heart, they always come back. Your children are frantic. You're rejoicing, but the cat comes home. I remember going to see my uncle and aunt in Sparta, Georgia. They owned a huge dairy farm. They milked at 4 a.m. and 4 p.m. I'm so thankful I never saw the 4 a.m. milking. I didn't want to get up that early. But we'd be over there in the afternoons, on Sunday afternoon, about 3 o'clock or 3:15, you'd see dairy cows scattered to the furthest parts of the pasture. And then all of a sudden, about 3:15, they're all getting in a line. And they all, you don't have to call them, they all show up at the dairy barn, ready to be milked again, in single file. He's got 150, 200 dairy cows out there. They have a homing device. A horse will come back to the stable. But when you look at the sheep, they can't even find their way back to the flock. It becomes a matter of great urgency for the sheep to be restored to the flock. Sheep don't even have a keen sense of smell. That's why oftentimes they'll eat poisonous weeds or they'll drink polluted water and they die. Furthermore, they're defenseless. When you think about a bear, they can crush somebody. Last year when we were in North Carolina, a little condominium we go to in Western North Carolina, for the first time, we've been going there since 1979, for the first time when they gave us our packet, when we got there, it said, "Beware of the bears. Give them their space." Never seen a bear up there. So I walked out late one evening, and you take about 15 steps, and the trash cans are buried in the ground. And so I got about 5 steps out there on the deck, and all of a sudden I looked out the left side. There is a bear over there that weighs about 250 pounds. I'm like, whoa. And so I dove back into the condominium, and I said, "Delaine, we got a bear out here." She said, let me see. And so she goes out there, "Let's take a picture." Thankfully, he was interested in the garbage can. They can crush their prey. Mules kick, snakes strike, but a sheep is absolutely defenseless. Now, the last thing a shepherd does before he goes to sleep at night, he has to go count the flock. And if there's one that is missing, it says a lost sheep, he secures the ones that are together, and then he goes out to find that one to restore that sheep. The cast sheep restored to his feet. The lost sheep restored to the flock. Ladies and gentlemen, when we wander spiritually from the Lord, if you belong to the shepherd will come for you, and he will lift you to the place of restoration. Now think about this. We can restore antiques. We can remodel automobiles. We also refurbish old clocks and paintings. But not one of us can restore our own soul. That's the shepherd's job. Second thing I want to share with you today is just very, very simple. Righteousness. Verse 23:3b. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. So the good shepherd not only feeds his flock, but notice here that he leads his flock. He not only provides for his flock, it says here that he guides his flock. He not only protects his flock, he directs them, he leads them to the paths of righteousness, the right choice. Sheep also have poor vision. They can only see about 10 yards from their eyes. That's why they tend to wander. You remember Isaiah 53:6 says, "We all like sheep have gone astray." When sheep don't follow the shepherd, they always get off on the wrong path. You know, the Palestinian shepherd was an excellent person at reading tracks. They would know if there were robbers, if those were robbers' tracks. They would know if it's wild beasts that might attack their flock. But I want you to know the sheep just sees tracks. They don't know whose they are, whether they're friend or foe. They just follow a trail sometimes. I'm reminded of Proverbs 14:12. There's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. The good shepherd always has the sheep on a path of green grass and still waters. Also, he says here, he leads us to the right paths. He He never leads the sheep to destruction, never to polluted waters, never to poisonous grass. He never guides them in the fields where food and water are not available. He only guides them to the places that are right for them. The shepherd always bats a thousand. He never makes a bad decision. He never makes a mistake. He just wants to guide you to paths that are right for you. Proverbs 4:18 says this, "But the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day." Think about it. The path of God is one that knows no darkness, no danger, and no disappointment. Listen to Proverbs 12:28, "And the way of righteousness is life, and its pathway there is no death." Even though sheep have poor eyesight, they really don't have to see as long as they follow the shepherd and are staying in his path. Not every one of us has bad eyesight, but sometimes in the spiritual sense we do, because even with the best eyesight in the world, there's one thing you and I can't see. We can't see the future. And we face the unknown. Corrie ten Boom said this, and it's an excellent comment. She said, "Never be afraid to trust a future you don't know to your God that you do know." Please understand and get this next truth into your heart. As long as the sheep can see the shepherd and stay close to the shepherd, they don't ever have to worry about the future. There's only one way the sheep and the shepherd can see the shepherd, is because of bad eyesight, is they have to stay close to him. I was with somebody the other day and said, "This is getting to be old." And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And they had a piece of paper out about this far. And I said, "You know, I went through that one time." I didn't tell them you're getting OLD. I try to be an encourager. I said, "Yes." I said, "Our children's minister, Chris, used to love to go to lunch with me. And when I didn't have my glasses, he would hold up a menu on his chest all the way across the table. Say, 'Hey, Rev, read this.'" I said, "Well, you can get an eye exam, you can get contacts." And I said, "You can return that to a normal distance from your eyes." Listen, the shepherd can only lead the sheep that are looking at him and are walking close to him and listening to him. Sheep can't follow a shepherd they don't see, and they can't listen to a shepherd they don't hear. Now, to receive God's signal, to be led in the path of righteousness, to be lifted to a place of restoration, three little things I want you to write down, not in your outline. First of all, ask God for wisdom. James 1:5. "Any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it'll be given to him." Ask God to give you wisdom to manage your knowledge, to make wise and correct decisions. Number two, ask God to guide your walk. Isaiah 30:21. "Your ears shall hear a word behind you, saying, 'This is the way, walk in it.' And when you turn to the right, or wherever you turn to the left, God will be guiding you." Do you ever get up in the morning and say, "God, now today I just want you to order my steps and put me exactly where you want me to be"? Several years ago, I was driving from our neighborhood through Lindale. And I don't always go through Lindale anymore, because I always catch those trains over there. And I lose some of my Christian witness while I'm waiting on those trains sometime. And so, but I came over there one day, and I was coming down by Gilbert Center and that big track out there. There's some wild dogs around Lindale. They don't have owners, is what I'm telling you, and they're pretty vicious. I don't often see them, but this particular morning I was coming down, and there was a lady, I guess she looked like she was about 35 years old, and she was jogging on the track, and as I came down the hill in my truck, she stopped, and those dogs started to attack her. And so I didn't have my gun that day. I probably would have been arrested for killing two wild dogs and sparing a human being's life, because those dogs deserved to go to our $5 million dog shelter at the Ritz-Carlton downtown for attacking that lady. That's the way we interpret things here in politics in Rome, Georgia. But I took my pickup and drove between those dogs and that lady. And so I reached, I had one of those golf umbrellas. I tell you it's a golf umbrella, but most of them are the ones Barry Henderson's given me. They're actually a graveside umbrella. And so I started getting out of my truck, swinging at those dogs. They took off through the woods. And I looked at that lady and waved for her to go. When I got to work that day, Chris Giddens said, "Man, you're a hero on Facebook." I said, "What did I do?" He said, "There's a lady here that says she was running over at Gilbert Park and two dogs were about to attack her, and you saved her life." Well, I never saw it quite like that. I kind of liked that. But you know what that was all about? God directed my path to be exactly where I was supposed to be when He wanted me to be there. The third thing I want you to write down, finally ask God to guard your ways. Psalm 139, 23 and 24, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties, and see if there are any anxieties in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Those of you who are familiar with the old time rock and roll, remember February 3rd, 1959. That's known in music history as the day music died. Plane crash in a snow-covered cornfield near Clear Lake, Iowa, killed Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P. Richardson. They were in the middle of a three-week concert traveling across the nation called the Winter Party. They were traveling from concert to concert in an old bus. The heater was broke. It was the dead of winter, and the temperature never got above freezing. Buddy Holly said, "I'm not traveling another mile in this bus. I'm chartering a private plane." Now understand, this is a four-seater, one for the pilot and three other people. And he said, "I'm going to take two of my guys along myself, and we're going to fly from destination to destination." So Buddy Holly got his other two band members. Now the name of the band was the Crickets. Well, one of the members of the band was named J.P. Richardson. He contracted the flu. He said, "I can't ride in this bus another mile either." And he was not scheduled to fly on the plane, so the bass guitar player struck a deal. He was supposed to be riding on the bus. He said, "Listen," he said, "I'll let you have my seat on the plane if you'll give me that new sleeping bag that you just bought, so I can wrap up and be warm on this bus as I keep traveling down here." And because of that simple decision, Waylon Jennings was able to go on and become a household name in the music industry. He swapped seats with a guy, plane seat for a bus, and the other three were killed. Ladies and gentlemen, every day we make choices. Now listen, the shepherd just got a job, and that's to lead the sheep. Sheep got a job, that's to follow the leadership of the shepherd. And we're to do that to the glory of God, knowing that His way is always the right way. We're just open to His direction, to His guidance, to His still small voice. You'll find that He wants to speak to you, and we'll make better choices. You know, a lot of us have had nicknames through the years. My dad just always called me Little Man. I never could figure that out. I've been called Phil Pill, and I've been called some things I can't repeat, even by church members. But I was reading the other day about some sports figures. You remember in baseball, they've never been short of of nicknames. You had Babe. Know who that is? You had the Sultan of SWAT, the Yankee Clipper, the Rocket, the Big Unit, A-Rod, Splendid Splinter. But one of the most unique names I found was this. Travis Havner, retired from the Cleveland Indians as a designated hitter. Previously, he played for the Texas Rangers. And the manager there, Bill Selby, nicknamed him. He said, that guy was a project. Well, the other players, because this guy was so big, they called him Donkey. And so the manager over there at the Texas Rangers just refined what they said. Instead of a project and a donkey, he called him a Pronk. You know what? That unusual nickname describes all of us as Christians, because we're God's project. And sometimes we don't pay attention to him, and we kind of respond like a what? I didn't call you a donkey this morning. But sometimes we can be called a Pronk. There's one that's ready to remedy our guilt, and there's one who's ready to show the grace of the Good Shepherd to us. Who are you going to trust next time you're making choices? If you'll stand right here and in the Family Life Center in our simulcast service,